Again, I welcome you today, July the 28th, 2018. Today is special because we close series number 39, entitled Veritable Redemption, with this 12th study of that series. It is entitled Third Angelic Ascendancy. As a preamble, let us read Matthew chapter 23, verse 37 through 39. O Jerusalem, O Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets, and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. The Lord laments about Jerusalem and her recalcitrance. He indicates that she's a people because she has children. And he says that he had Old Testament purpose was to gather those of her constituency. You see, in ancient Israel, members of each family would send a delegation to represent their quadrant of the kingdom in Jerusalem. And that's why they are referred to as Jerusalem. And they would have elders, therefore, that would have a special appeal to the king so that they could get representation in their quadrants. Unfortunately, though, they resisted the Lord's efforts to protect their constituency. And this is the focus of the Lord's lamentations. And somehow or another, we're going to get a lesson about the third angelic ascendancy that relates to this text. But for now, he says, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not? Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. Now, Jerusalem had a house. Not the house of Judah, but the house of Jerusalem. The people whom she represented was left desolate. We see that it was in the house of Judah, the Jews, because the Lord came to that house and ministered to it. They had a system of leadership, system of elders. They had a system of worship established by the law of Moses. But the Lord's problem now is she is scattered. Her house is left unto her desolate. But the good news is found in verse 39. For I say unto you, ye shall not see me henceforth, till ye shall say, blessed, 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 till ye shall say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. The Lord shows you he's still fastidious to his promise of Deuteronomy 18, that he's going to communicate to them through a surrogate. And then that shall be the day of their blessing. Evidently, their vision of Christ hinges upon somebody else whom the Lord says that they are going to joy over and call blessed. Why? Because he comes in the name of the Lord. It's their day of rescue, their day of relief, their day of peace. And that's the day that we have been looking forward to as well, though we may have misunderstood. With the intent to circle back on that text, now let us go to Revelation chapter 14. And I quote, and I saw another, and I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth, and the sea and the fountains of waters. And there followed another angel, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And in verse 9, and the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast in his image, and receive his mark in his forehead, or in his hand, verse 10, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God. The third angel shows you the day of judicial reprisals. We've made comment many times on the intricacies of this verse. Today, though, Let me just begin our study by manifesting that verse 9 affirms the Seventh Day Adventist designated order by referring to it as the three angels' message. Because verse 9 speaks of the third angel, suggesting that the angel before it was the second. And the angel before it was the what?
First.
The first angel. So you have the three angels' message, first, second, and third. We've seen that this is a combination of the gospel that's going to be preached. It's a culmination of the spiritual input that heaven has vested in humanity that has been designated for us to adhere to throughout eternity. In fact, E.G. White says in the Seventh Bible Commentary, page 985, I quote it to you again, "The three angels' messages are to be combined, giving threefold light to the world." Now, if you notice, the third angel has several messages without an additional designation of angels. We've noted that there's no reason other than the fact that the ordination of the angels, first, second, and third, prefigure the input of divine work that has been vested in the gospel beforehand. The first prefigures Moses' work. We've taken a great deal of time to show that. The second prefigures Jesus' work. And the third prefigures the work of the mustard seed, the Son of Man. Before we build on that point, it's a significant one. Let me just make sure that you understand that the term angels is symbolic. There are many angelic symbols described in the book of Revelation, and each require unique, explicit, interpretive identity. For example, Revelation chapter 1, verse 19 through 20, John is instructed as follows, "Write these things which thou hast seen, and the things which are, and the things which shall be hereafter." Verse 20. "The mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks." The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. And the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches. Logically, therefore, the seven churches represent the totality of Christian ordained ministries over the past 2,000 years. And they're prefigured by seven churches. But their leadership is described as angels. I reiterate, quote, "The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches." Now, we should not therefore presume that that title warrants to them special veneration. Oh, these are divine beings. These are people that can have no flaws. These are people that God has graced with righteousness. No, they are just merely people that represent heaven's interest to the world, regardless of their relationship to righteousness and sin. That's an important point. And they are separate and distinct from the three angels. And that's why you see in Revelation chapter 3, a condemnation is conveyed upon the angel of the church of Laodicea, showing that he does not wear a halo in God's mind, showing that he's deserving of condemnation. We ought not to confuse every rendering of the term angel to be a singular, monolithic meaning. That's the point that I want to make. Showing it to you from Revelation chapter 5. These angels differ in assignment. And it states, quote, "And I beheld and heard the voice of many angels round about the throne and the beast and the elders." That's Revelation chapter 5, verse 11. So in that text, John was shown beasts and elders in a separate and distinct group of people that he referred to as angels. and they gathered round about the throne of the highest, the throne of God. Therefore, we should not confuse them with the angels that we read about. They represent the seven churches, nor with the three angels of Revelation chapter 14. Somebody's nodding to get the point that I'm trying to make. Revelation chapter 8 shows you even a more special designation. Another diverse application of that figurative term. And I quote, "And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour." Verse 2. "And I saw the seven angels which stood before God. And to them were given seven trumpets." Again, Revelation chapter 8, verses 1 and 2. So here again we see seven angels. Now each of these angels, they stood around the throne, and Father says, "Here, take this trumpet." Whatever that symbolism indicates, we cannot digress to discern its meaning now. We know that these angels had a special cause and a special meaning. Therefore, they differ in assignment from the others. Another designation, the three angels of Revelation 14, the focus of our study today. But in addition to them, in the same chapter of Revelation, you have angels that come out of the temple. And we've discerned and from prior study that you ought not to confuse the angels that come out of the temple. I challenge you to reach back into those former studies to garner again the reason why they can't be confused. But there was a time when Davidia used to count them as additional messengers, claiming that there were six angels or five angels. And then each person that came along, they say, "Well, this is the fifth angel or the sixth angel." And they were mistaken because they did not have an ear to hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. Those angels are separate in their designation, in their commission, than the three angels. Therefore, devoid of any opposing conclusion, the three angels of Revelation 14 and their ordination are unique unto themselves. He that hath an ear to hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches must decipher their meanings. Our three angels, our point of focus today, they fly in the midst of heaven. This means these are the first ones to garner mastery over Earth's gravitational tug, over death. Heaven has given them wings, so to speak. Everybody else has to relate with Earth's gravity under the distresses and under the pressures that it applies to their bodies. But these angels, they had the power to fly. They are not oblivious to Earth. They still respect her gravitational tug, but they just have gained mastery over it. And having said these things, let me take you to our key and central theme of the three angels' message. Let us focus on the adverb, another. That requires that we reread Revelation chapter 14. Verse 6 says, "And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven." Which angel is that? Verse 8 says, "And there followed another angel," saying Babylon has fallen. And then verse 9 says, "And the third angel followed them." Undeniably then, verse 6 defines the first angel. So now you have a glimpse of our conundrum, our point of puzzlement. Do you get it? Why is verse 6 identified as another angel? Maybe I could cite to you the definition from Webster so that you could see the full gravity of the question. Webster defines another. Different or distinct from the one first considered, being one more in addition to one or more of the same kind. An additional one, one more. That's how Webster tells us that we use the term another. So we have a problem here because it lists three angels and it tells us that the third one is the third one. It gives us the order, which means that we have identified correctly as the Seventh-day Adventist Church the first and the second one. So maybe we could pause right now. Somebody can give us the answer. And then we could just go to dinner and, desist from continuing to explore this subject matter. Can anybody help me to understand why the first angel John the Revelator refers to as another angel? We know that it couldn't be confused with the seven trumpet-bearing angels. We know it couldn't be confused with the seven angels of the seven churches. These declare the everlasting gospel. These are not purveyors of a temporal gospel. I submit to you that the three angels' messages, Revelation 14, are packaged with the angel of Revelation 7, verses 1 through 4. And after these things, I'm reading, I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the winds should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. So John was given a vision. And again, we have another classification, a grouping of angels. Beings that are depicted as having a special commission. These were not commissioned to preach the gospel, the everlasting gospel. They were commissioned to holding the four winds. We can't appreciate the holding of the four winds without reading the opening of the sixth seal in Revelation chapter 6, verse 13, and the stars of heaven fell into the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs, when she is shaken of a mighty wind. The Lord gives allusion to this, the defoliation of the fig tree in His ministry. This fig tree is defoliated because the Holy Spirit blasted a doctrine that invalidated their commission and made their standing as a viable fruit-producing tree invalid, which is symbolized by the blasting of the winds. Necessarily, therefore, and unequivocally, these four angels are given the commission to ensure that the four winds of the earth blow not on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. We saw your devastation to Laodicea. We saw how you defoliated and invalidated and withered that fig tree. So I want you to hold up a little longer. You've got Baptist people out there. You got Catholic people out there. You got Methodist people. You got Buddhist people. You got Mohammedans. You got people from all the religions of the world, houses that represent theological trees. We don't want them to lose their standing with God. If you blast this truth prematurely, then they're going to prematurely reject it and have the same fate as Laodicea. Hold the four winds. And this is one of the reasons why, Danette, when you're searching the YouTube, you see all these doctrines that are blasting upon the earth. It's enough to keep people occupied so that they don't become entangled with the truth and then seek to reject it and lose their standing. I tell you that Revelation chapter 7 is going to introduce to us more depth to the three angels' message. And that's why he says, I showed you the four angels. But then comes another angel. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea. His message is not to the four angels that were designated to hold back the winds. His message, the rod shows us as well, I believe, was to protect the earth from a different subset of angels. These angels are sword-wielding beings that are given the commission to punish. So this ascending angel gives to them new light, redefines their Ezekiel 9 commission, and says, slow your roll. The Seventh-day Adventist Church has rejected the gospel. But it's not time for you to begin wielding your sword. I've got more light. I'm on the point of ascendancy. Then he says, don't hurt the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. And there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. He introduces the sealing message. And 144,000 is the same message that is revisited and circled back upon in Revelation chapter 14. So that first angel and the three angels' message has a relationship to the ascending angel, the one that's got the seal of God. Let us see some more clues that will give us affirmation of this finding. This package of angels envelops the harvest of the 144,000. And what you're seeing in Revelation chapter 7 is a definition of the 144,000 that was first taught and had to be circumcised so that the four angels that was given a commission to hurt the earth would not begin their hurting prematurely. So the package includes the harvest of the 144,000. And that equals the ascending angel plus all three of the angels of Revelation chapter 14. I'm going to attempt to make this less confusing as we advance. Manifestly, therefore, it shows the third angel's work. Whose work? The third angel's work before the declaration of the everlasting gospel to the world is preached. He's the angel that makes a transition from the temporal gospel to the everlasting gospel. He transcends from what we thought about and taught about yesterday to what we're going to know, appreciate, and learn and love throughout eternity. Since both Moses and Jesus prophesy of Israel's dissolution and then her emergence, our conclusion is certified. You cannot just go with what Moses said, the first angel said about Israel, or what Jesus said about Israel. It has to be combined together in the third angel's message. It has to be combined with this new light that he's shedding upon the 144,000. See if you can follow me now. Moses talked about Israel being dispersed and then being regathered and restored. Jesus, we just read, talks about Jerusalem the day she's going to pronounce, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Well, the mustard seed is the first one in the history of Bible prophecy to define Jerusalem. And to show they represent the sons of America's former slaves. Therefore, to combine the three angels' messages, you have to combine the doctrine as delivered by Moses, the doctrine as delivered by Jesus, and the doctrine that is delivered by the mustard seed before his complete ascendancy. Is this clear? To help you understand, you have to remember that each of the three angels, as interpreted now with our new light, had a preliminary administration. That's why the Lord said in John chapter 5, verse 46 and 47, for had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me, verse 47. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words? Which indicates that the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the public that heard the Lord make this announcement did not know that they didn't believe Moses. They needed a teacher to manifest their confusion over the first angel's message. Similarly, the Christians have discounted the law. They don't understand that they need Moses in order for them to be legitimate Christians. Because Moses wrote of Christ. How can you believe of Christ if you don't believe Moses' word? And this is the reason why the Seventh-day Adventist faith began by a revisitation of the law. Moses, in a simpler way, ministered before he was conjoined with Jesus' work. Jesus ministered in a simpler way. The Bible refers to it as milk doctrine. Before his light was conjoined with the third angel. And the third angel ministered in a simpler way before working for Christ. Before the day when he is joined with the mighty angel that comes to assist him. Revelation chapter 7 shows you the beginnings of his work. Shows you his ministry. The first book that I wrote, in fact, of the few first books that I wrote in the 1900s, 1994, 1996, around then, was, first of all, the work that manifested that the 144,000, contrary to what the rod taught, showing you evidence from the rod that I had authority to contradict him by virtue of Vitiata's mandate that you prove all things and hold fast to that which is good, also countervailing the theme that the golden bowl was full of oil, showing that even though Vitiata said it was full of oil, doesn't mean that all the oil vested therein was understood. Showing you that Vitiata quoted and placed in the bowl, Luke chapter 14, showing you the need for servants, and I quoted, a certain man made a great supper and bade many, and sent his servants at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. And they all with one consent began to make excuse. They all rejected his ministry. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, go out quickly into the street and bring in hither the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. The Lord said, go out and bring in. For I say unto you, that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. Davidians didn't understand that our ministerial outreach would shift and adjust, and we would be told to go out of the Seventh-day Adventist church and bring in. That was my message. Then, people confused me with teaching what the Hebrew Israelites teach. I remember Sidney Davis countervailing me on this point. I said, not so. I teach that the sons of America's former slaves represent Jerusalem. Not all of Israel, but the leaders that are going to emerge, and a subset of them, those are going to be the leaders amongst them, are going to be the 144,000. And this is the clarification that causes the ascending angel to tell the assaulting angel to slow their roll. Remember, beforehand, we thought that how would events unfold at the slaughter of Ezekiel 9? There would be a devastation in the Seventh-day Adventist church, and people that were left would be the ones that had the seal. The mustard seed showed that's not the way it's supposed to be. The Lord is going to bring the 144,000 into the Seventh-day Adventist church. Then, according to Isaiah 65 and 66, he's going to slay the Seventh-day Adventist church so that they will see what they've lost. Consequently, you can see the need, can't you, to tell the angels to whom it was given to hurt not the earth, nor any tree. The message likewise clarifies the blowing of the four winds. It shows you the day, as we've done in this series, whereby the gospel of salvation, the everlasting gospel, is going to be declared to every creature. This has been a subject of much convolution and controversy over the entire expanse of the Adventist experience. It began with William Miller thinking that Christ would come and destroy all the wicked and take them back home to heaven. We as Adventists had a similar theology. We believed that Jesus would come and destroy the wicked with the brightness of His coming and whisk us off to heaven under His protection. The rod showed us, no, we're going to evangelize. The mustard seed shows that we're going to evangelize beginning from our perch in America. That's why the third angel is shown ascending from the east. The east of the United States. The east of the wilderness of the people. The east of the land that the Lord says He prepared for His disciples. Now be a good time to revisit Ezekiel chapter 2. I plan to read verse 1 through 3, verse 5, 7 through 10, then Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 1 through 3, 7, 10, and 11. And what you're going to see here is you're going to see a message given to Seventh-day Adventists to warn the Seventh-day Adventist church. That message was first orchestrated by V.T. Hotef in 1930. And I quote, "And he said unto me, Son of man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak unto thee. And the Spirit entered into me when he spake unto me, and set me upon my feet, that I heard him that spake unto me. And he said unto me, The Son of man, I send thee to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that hath rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me, even unto this very day." This was the message given to the Vidya. We didn't make a distinction between Jesus and Christ. It was just our simple message to take the gospel of reform to the Seventh-day Adventist church, and to do so with the acclaim of the spirit of prophecy. That's why he says, "And the Spirit entered into me." That was quite an announcement, because Adventists want you to be very careful before you claim the spirit of prophecy, before you claim to be a prophet. And therefore, that was one of the things that prejudiced the Seventh-day Adventist church. One of the aspects of their great consternation, they wanted E.G. White to be the last prophet. They didn't want God to say anything else to them. But it continues. Verse 5, "And they, whether they will hear, or whether they will forbear, for they are a rebellious house, yet shall know that there hath been a prophet among them." See, the Lord says it doesn't matter whether they accept it or reject it. The day is going to come, in the day of the third angel's ascendancy, where they're going to know before they're cut down that they've turned their back on me, that there has been a prophet among them. Verse 7, "And thou shalt speak my words unto them, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, for they are most rebellious." There comes the conjunction. "But thou, son of man, but thou, son of man, hear what I say unto thee." Don't you see the graduation of the gospel? Don't you see how the Lord told him to take your gospel to the Seventh-day Adventist church? They're a most rebellious house. Doesn't matter whether they will hear or forbear. But it matters that you hear what I say unto you, Ezekiel, the Son of Man. There's a gospel that's going to be introduced to you. You don't know what it is now, but the day is going to come when you're going to be held responsible for advancing beyond what you understood yesterday. You can't just recline on your knees and say, "I did a faithful job declaring the rod message to the brethren of the Seventh-day Adventist church." No, not to meet the requisites of the Son of Man, the angel with the seal. He says, "But thou, son of man, hear what I say unto thee. Hear what I say unto thee. Be not thou rebellious like that rebellious house. Open thy mouth and eat that I give thee." Their challenge was that Christ was going to give them additional light and additional truth, and they had to open their mouth and eat it. It's going to come from the scriptures, where it says, "And when I looked, behold, a hand was sent unto me." And lo, a roll of a book was therein. And he spread it before me. Think of a scroll being unrolled. A manifestly, therefore, this is what Christ did for the Son of Man. And he spread it before me, and it was written within and without. And there was written therein lamentation and mourning and woe. Moreover, he said unto me, Son of Man, eat that thou findest, eat this roll, and go speak unto the house of Israel. So now he's given a second commission to speak to the house of Israel. This represents our commission to Davidia. After we've consumed the roll. So I opened my mouth, and he caused me to eat that roll. And he said unto me, Son of Man, cause thy belly to eat, and fill thy bowels with this roll that I give thee. Then did I eat it, and it was in my mouth as honey for sweetness. There's no disappointment in this gospel message. It's a message that shows you our day of peace. It's in our mouths as for honey for sweetness. Verse 7. But the house of Israel, whom? The house of Israel will not hearken unto thee, for they will not hearken unto me, for all the house of Israel are impudent and hard-hearted. Then the question logically needs to be asked, why send me to the house of Israel? If they're not going to hear, I send you to the house of Israel, I've got my reasons. All of heaven is watching. Everybody's examining to see their faithfulness. I just need to establish your faithfulness. See to it that you eat. They're not going to hear. I need to legally and unquestionably ascend thee from the east. Ascend thee above the Seventh-day Adventist Church and above all others on earth. Therefore, though we thought all these years that the 144,000 would one day magically blossom from the Seventh-day Adventist Church, it's in direct violation of what the rod states. When you prove all things and hold fast that which is good. Because the Bible affirms that which the scroll has unrolled to us, that the Seventh-day Adventist Church would not hear. Don't you think that the men with the slaughtering weapons need to know that? Verse 10. Moreover, he said unto me, Son of Man, all my words that I shall speak unto thee, receive in thine heart, and hear with thine ears. He's commissioning the Son of Man now to become the Son of Man, prophesied in the New Testament scriptures, to imbibe, to consume the flesh and blood of Jesus. All his words, all his testimony, you have to integrate into your doctrine, your theology. This is your commission as the third angel on your ascendancy. You'll never become the first angel. That work was already written. Moses has already performed his work. You're not going to become the second angel. Jesus has ascended to the right hand of the Father and is remotely controlling the work from that perch. But as the third angel, he says, all my words that I shall speak unto thee, receive in thine heart, and hear with thine ears. And go get thee to them of the captivity, unto the children of thy people, and speak unto them, and tell them, thus saith the Lord God, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear. Then the subject changes. He says he took them up into the Spirit. So Ezekiel is advanced in his commission. But he already was given the commission to go to the house of Israel. Now he makes a distinction of another subset of Israel, the children of thy people, the genetic descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not the abstract, theoretical house of Israel. That point is going to be made more clear very shortly. But he's sent to the actual people. That's why it says, go get thee. That means go out and bring in. This shows you the day of our transitory theology. the day when we upstaked our tents and moved elsewhere in the wilderness. The day when we have circumcised our theology, whereby we had this vision of joy covering our heads, that the Seventh-day Adventist Church would embrace the gospel and that they would be the instruments to use to preach it to the world. And now we see that it's going to come from a different, separate, and distinct people, a people of affliction and oppression. The people, if you go on to read, the children of Ezekiel's people. But why is it confusing? What's the point of confusion? Why is the Son of Man sent to two people called Israel? Understand that if the Seventh-day Adventist Church is Israel, then the entirety of the universe believes that doctrine until it's unfolded and until it's cut away, until it is explained. Paul helps us to understand. Romans chapter 11, verse 22 through 26. Behold the goodness and severity of God on them which fell. Who fell? Israel, he's referring to. Severity, but toward thee, referring to the Gentiles, goodness. If thou continue in his goodness, you're not promised as Christians, as Gentile Christian gospel teachers. As we see from Revelation chapter 3, the angel of the church of Laodicea spewed out of Jesus' mouth, being the last and the highest church in the gospel dispensation of Christianity, exemplifies and underscores Paul's point. It gives you the opportunity only in the hour of judgment, whereby you can behold the goodness and severity of God. People are shocked and surprised when I teach how the message is going to be broadcast around the globe and how billions of people are going to embrace it. But Paul says you got to behold the goodness of God. And they're also shocked when I show the results that are going to occur to them under the third angel for receiving the mark of the beast in their foreheads and in their hands, as it's expressed in Revelation chapter 14 under the third angel. And how they see the severity of God in the destruction of the church of Laodicea with the slaughter of Ezekiel 9. As a Christian, you're commissioned to behold the goodness and severity of God, and you can only behold that in the hour of his judgment. The quote continues, on them which fell severity, but toward thee goodness, if thou continue in his goodness. Otherwise, thou also shalt be cut off. And they also, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall be grafted in. So if Israel's converted, they're going to be grafted into the Gentile stock. And they also, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall be grafted in. For God is able to graft them in again. For if thou wert cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, you know he's talking about therefore the Gentiles, right? For if thou wert cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? You see the dichotomy between the Hebrews and the Gentiles. One group has been grafted in as a wild tree so that they inherit the stock, making them Israel. Ezekiel, therefore, by giving them commission to go to the house of Israel, is commissioning them to go to the wild people that were grafted in to the holy tree while the others were cut away. That was a good thing to do, right? The severity was that the Hebrews were cut away. How much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? Verse 25. For I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceit. That blindness in part is happened to Israel, until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. Verse 26. And so all Israel shall be saved, as it is written, There shall come out. There shall come out of Zion the deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. Romans chapter 11, verse 22 through 26. And this is why the Son of Man is sending to the children of the people. It's time to take the natural tree and graft them back in to the original stock. These are people that are the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Therefore, there is no point of confusion. There's only a point that requires explanation. The incontrovertible rendering is now absolute and unassailable. The Son of Man has a dual commission. First, his commission is to go to the brethren of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, then to Davidia, and then he goes to the children of his people. When he goes to the children of Israel to rescue Jerusalem, so that they can say, "Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord," then that is the commission of the third angel. Those other commissions represent his point of ascendancy, linking Revelation chapter 7 to Revelation chapter 14. I remember how daunting it was. We would go to Adventist gatherings. We were shunned. You had never been so lonely as to be among thousands of people and being completely ignored. I'd have nightmares about that. I really would. I dreamed about that. You know, being in large gatherings and being isolated and nobody wanted to talk to us or befriend us. And this was the work that we had to do. Didn't matter whether they heard or whether they rejected. Our commission was to go. Then we were told to consume the testimony of Jesus and deliver it to Davidia. And deliver it to them whether they would hear or whether they would forbear. But now, thankfully, the words of the Lord are sweet in our mouth. It's a delicious roll. So the third angel is the angel with the sweet roll. I like that because it affords to us a double metaphor. The roll representing the scroll, and the roll represent the true bread which the Father sent down from heaven. Revisiting John chapter 6, verse 26. This is the work of Jesus. He was a bread distributor. This was part of his work. This is part of his flesh and blood that we had to master. He journeyed to the other side of the Sea of Tiberias. He took a young lad with 5 loaves and 2 fish. He blessed them and he distributed them. They were all filled and they were all fed. Then he ascended up to the mountain, which represents Jesus' ascendancy. He sent the disciples to traverse the other side of the Sea of Tiberias, which means they had to go through the wilderness Catholic experience. It was a rough and tumultuous experience. The seas and the waves and the torrents raged against the boat, the anointed house of God. But then, just as they thought that their end would come, they see the Lord walking on water. Peter ventures forward and likewise steps out of the ship to greet the Lord. And as soon as the Lord steps into the ship, a miracle occurred. They were immediately cast onto the shore. There were other Christian ships on that tumultuous journey. And they too passed over to find the Lord. They didn't know that he had left them. And we pick up on the conversation. Verse 25 of John 6. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, "Rabbi, when camest thou hither?" And Jesus answered them and said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For him hath God the Father sealed." Now this is Christ speaking through Jesus. He refers to himself in the first person by saying, says, "Ye seek me, but you're wrong. I'm apprehending you. I'm giving you a reprimand.
This ought not to be the focus of your labor. You need to labor for that antitypical Ezekiel, the Son of Man. You need to labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For him hath God the Father sealed. Therefore, we cannot convey this seal upon Jesus or upon Christ. The seal belongs, just where Revelation put it, upon the angel that ascends out of the east. Isn't that what it says? Verse 2 of Revelation 7, and I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. Therefore, if he has the seal of the living God, then it has to be someone other than Jesus or Christ, whom Christ recommends that you labor for, because the Father hath sealed him. He has your protection. He has your guard. He has your salvation. You need to labor for the meat which he distributes. Evidently, the meat which I distributed is separate and distinct from his meat, Christ declares. Now, my meat inculcates the meat of Moses, because Moses wrote of Christ, right? For had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me. If ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words? This person evidently is a separate and distinct individual, recognizing that the work of Moses is inculcated in the work of Christ. He has to be the third angel, the one that preaches the everlasting gospel, for it is the gospel that seals you. Verse 32. Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Therefore, Christ is the bread of God. All you need to now know is how to consume the roll. How to consume his words. The importance of integrating the testimony of Jesus in your life. For this was the commission of Ezekiel. Revisiting again. Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, all my words that I shall speak unto thee, receive in thine heart, and hear with thine ears. Therefore, in verse 39 of John 6, it says, and this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Therefore, the Father gave to Jesus his words, and he's going to raise it up again through the Son of Man in the last day. And it's going to be the standard. Therefore, you can't preach this gospel to the world. The Lord only wants those people that see the Son and to hear him, to believe on him. Then when he elevates him unto the cloud, everybody will have their opportunity to see the Son and believe on him. It's a message that comes in stages. Hosea chapter 1, verse 11. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together, appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land. For great shall be the day of Jezreel. Verse 2, say ye unto your brethren, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhamah, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts. So this is Christ telling Jezreel, the firstborn of Hosea and Gomer, Hosea being prefigurative of Jesus, that they have to plead, because their mother is not Christ's wife. Lest I strip her naked and set her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness and set her like a dry land and slay her with thirst. And I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be children of whoredom.
So this was the gospel that we as Davidians took to the mother, that she needed to reform herself. She needed to continue to remain faithful so that she could retain her designation of Israel. But by virtue of the fact that she did not heed Paul's counsel and did not continue to forbear under the truth, did not continue in his goodness, the Lord says, not being my wife, I'm going to take away her place, and I'm not going to have mercy on her children. Therefore, her children, the ones that are not going to hear or forbear, they're not going to receive salvation. Like the steely, serrated jaws of a snapped trapper's snare. The conclusion is inescapable. The ascending angel from the east transits the church during her day of circumcision from Jesus to Christ by redefining and certifying the identity of Israel, the 144,000. Formerly thought to be the Seventh-day Adventist church, heretofore with her rejection of the raw message under Riti Hativ, i.e. Jezreel, the slaughter was promised to befall Laodicea. But the time of her punishment is amended. Now the message to slow your roll is blasted. The 144,000 being outside the church must first be sealed. The four hurting angels of Revelation 7, the Enochians, as shown below, have their mission revised. This, the identity of Jerusalem, is the initial message of the Son of Man before conjoining into his work that of Moses and Jesus. Let's take a moment and revisit Micah chapter 4 to hammer home this point of transition. A lot of transitions in Bible times, but the leaders never pass through the transition from one movement to the other. That's the difference between all other leadership and the mustard seed. Verse 1, but in the last days, when? Don't look for this to happen during the days of Jesus, during the days of Moses. Look for this to happen in the days of the Son of Man. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. And the nations shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. So we see there's three angels combined here. The law goes forth from Zion. Remember, the deliverer, according to Paul, comes out of Zion. The word of the Lord from Jerusalem. The 144,000, those who say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. They are going to declare the testimony of Jesus, the word of the Lord. And then the mustard seed is going to teach us of God's ways, prefigurative of Jacob. But before that happens, verse 7 gives us insight. It says, and I will make her that halted a remnant, and her that was cast far off a strong nation. Two females. One is going to be made a remnant. One is cast far off a strong nation. We see what Paul refers to in Romans chapter 11. For we see that those who be grafted in, the wild tree, is going to be cut away. And her that was cast off is going to be regrafted in. And I will make her that halted a remnant, and her that was cast far off a strong nation. And the Lord shall reign over them in Mount Zion from henceforth even forever. And thou, O tower of the flock, the stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come, even the first dominion. Manifestly, therefore, the first dominion, the opportunity to receive preeminence in the kingdom, comes to her that halted. She's given opportunity to be established in the kingdom. She's given opportunity to manage Jerusalem. Historically, that is exactly what the house of David did. Jerusalem gathered in the capital city
so that they could be managed by the throne of David.
There you have it.
The tower of her that halteth, the stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come, even the first dominion. The kingdom shall come to the daughter of Jerusalem. So the descendants of the daughter of Jerusalem are going to receive the kingdom. You have to embrace them as being the 144,000. You have to establish yourself not with what we've fought all these years. Let us be one of the 144,000. Let us be one among the 144,000. The mustard seed said no. They are your subordinates. They are the ones that have not had their Sabbath rest. They are the ones that are given the responsibility to evangelize the world. They are the ones that are going to have their work cut out while you enter into his rest. While you enter into management and into teaching assignments from those whom they're able to garner home. She's not happy with that. Now why dost thou cry out aloud? Is there no king in thee? Is thy counselor perished? For pangs have taken thee as a woman in travail. She refuses to accept the fact that the Son of Man, Ezekiel, is her leader and her teacher. She refuses his counsel. So therefore, she cries out to Christ. And he's not going to beckon to her because she's not his wife. Be in pain and labor to bring forth, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in travail. So she's the daughter of Zion, but that's not going to give to her any clemency, because out of Zion, the ruler is going to come forth to turn away ungodliness from Jacob. Be in pain and labor to bring forth, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in travail. For now shalt thou go forth out of the city, and thou shalt dwell in the field, and thou shalt go even to Babylon, and there shalt thou be delivered. There the Lord shall redeem thee from the hand of thine enemies. Manifestly, therefore, it shows her birth. She's been looking forward to the birth of the 144,000. That's going to happen according to, as the mustard seed pronounced on its ascendancy, as she reintegrates into her theology the gospel, circumcises the way, the false doctrines, and recognizes that her children are going to come directly from the sons of America's former slaves that are located in the Sunday-keeping churches. Chapter 5, verse 2, But thou Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me, that is to be ruler in Israel, whose going forth had been from old, even from everlasting. This was God's eternal plan, that this singular ruler, the Son of Man, would be sealed, and that he would emerge. The Lord says in John chapter 6, No man can come unto me unless the Father draw him. Well, he comes to Christ, the Father draws him to Christ, and he's made ruler, according to Micah chapter 5. And as you continue on to read through verse 4, it shows he's made great in the entirety of the earth. The conclusion of the matter is riveting. The third angel begins to rise in the east of America, just as the Mustard Seed Chronicle begins. It rises by defining Jerusalem's day of regrafting, also the slaughter and the kingdom. Revelation 7 shows precisely and in clarity to the Enochians, who are saved, men who gleefully wield the sword for God's honor. Remember we saw in Revelation chapter 7, the angels, whose purpose was to hurt the earth. Well, now we know that these are human beings that were taken up, as was Enoch, many of them without seeing death, for the express purpose of their divine commission of judgment. As shown in Jude, verse 14, And Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints. Why? To execute judgment upon all, and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches, which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. These are the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth. These are men of Bible history, like Esau,
Remember, Esau lived by the sword, like Prophet Muhammad, not recorded in Scripture, like Nebuchadnezzar, like Jehu, et al. These are the destroying angels who have been commissioned to hurt the earth. Remember, in Jeremiah chapter 25, Nebuchadnezzar is called the Lord's servant. We studied about that in our last study. His wielding of the sword is his service for Christ. Now, literally and actually aligned with Christ in heaven, he is to fulfill his decree declared in Daniel chapter 3, verse 28. Let us take a moment to read that. Verse 28, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. You may remember Nebuchadnezzar made a decree that if anybody didn't bow down to his image, they'd be cast into the fiery furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow down and were cast and were delivered by Christ. And so impressed was Nebuchadnezzar in his love for Christ that he made this decree. Therefore, I make a decree that every people, how many people?
Every.
The Bible credits him would be ruler over all the earth. But we know that that's only prefigurative. He didn't rule the people in China. He didn't rule the people in Peru. He didn't rule the people in South America. He didn't rule the people in many of the parts of Europe. But yet and still, his commission was that every people, nation, language would speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. The Lord is reserving for the time of His judgment, the day when He measures all the other houses of theology in the earth. If they speak a word amiss the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, if they speak against Christ, their houses are going to be made a dunghill. And they're going to be cut in pieces. This was Nebuchadnezzar's servitude. He is to fulfill his decree. Such could only be fulfilled in the hour of God's judgment, the day when all nations shall hear the everlasting gospel. Then, to precisely guarantee this cleansing, the mustard seed is elevated in the clouds to reveal Christ to all of humanity so as to protect the willing from the destructive judgments of God. Therefore does he invalidate the mark of the beast, the false definition of Christ taught by Babylon, so that men may no longer speak a word against the name of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, a disparaging word against Christ. Such is the day when the bread of heaven is distributed by the third angel, the day of his ascendancy. And with that, I bring the study to a close.